Okay, so welcome to the condensed matter review course. So this course is devoted to one main topic that is the notion of, so the main question we want to answer is the following. It is, what is a quantum phase? And to answer this question, we will see that we need to see things from a pretty modern point of view, because traditionally people didn't care too much in distinguishing the notion of a non-quantum phase of matter or a quantum phase of matter. In the sense that since everything is quantum, it was thought that there was no important distinction to make. That in the end, whatever we see in the material does emerge because of quantum mechanics. And certainly for many things, this is true. So, in fact, what is the most important characteristic of the solid state that is due to quantum mechanics that we could not have without quantum mechanics? It's the most important thing. Do you know? Oh, please speak.
Statistical mechanics?
No. The most important characteristic of solid state that is due to quantum mechanics is that it's solid. So without quantum mechanics, you would not have a solid material. Matter would collapse. No, electrons would collapse on the nucleus. And actually, you would not be able to do not only rigid materials, but we'll see in a second that the very notion of a large system with many, many particles, when they are charged, would be just would not work. So certainly, because of quantum mechanics, we do have solid state physics. So in some sense, that is quantum. However, most of the behavior of many body theory at the first sight looks classical in the sense that what people really measure are correlation functions, okay, that we'll describe in a second. And correlation functions pretty much display, in most cases, a classical behavior. However, by now, you should know that there are correlations that are different from classical correlations. For instance, they can violate Bell inequalities, or there are, like for instance, correlations that come from entanglement. And entanglement is a purely quantum phenomenon. So we would like to understand whether an entanglement and the structure of quantum correlations plays a role, an important role in condensed matter physics or not. So then there is a Another point of view that I want to bring out in this course, and it is, so usually people ask fundamental questions in a meta-theoretic way. Means people, for instance, there are fundamental questions like, oh, what happens at the Planck scale to gravity? Okay? And it is recognized that you cannot solve this problem within the theory the way we have it now. You need a new theory. So you need to go beyond the theory that we have. However, there are very important fundamental questions that can be phrased within the theory. Okay? And this is the type of questions that we will ask. So our theory will be ordinary, non-relativistic, quantum mechanics. Okay? And for the most part, we will consider a system, so systems with large n number of degrees of freedom. In most of this course, we will consider this number to be an integer, means that we really will see our systems like a collection of discrete subsystems. We will see what the continuum limit means, because that gives rise to some important concept and tools, but ultimately, matter is composed of a finite number of degrees of freedom. So we have to keep this picture in mind. And the fundamental questions that we have in mind are, okay, so we know what happens to one particle or two particles when they're subject to the laws of quantum mechanics. It's not straightforward. There are many interesting things, but somehow this is very well understood. So the main question is, what is possible for a system in the thermodynamic limit? That is when n goes to infinity. So one very important question is, what type of orders are possible? So when you have many, many particles, they not always live in a chaotic, disordered state, but the very fact that we have different materials means that they have different kinds of order. So the first question is, what kind of orders are possible? Another fundamental question is, so if I phrase it like this, it will sound very technical and not so fundamental, but I will elaborate on this, is do quantum metastable States exist. So let's try to understand what is this question. So do you know in general what is a metastable state? But please try.
Water which temperature is below the freezing point, for example.
Or somebody else wants to try something else?
Stable under thermodynamic fluctuations.
So by metastable state, we mean a state that is almost at equilibrium. Okay? So equilibrium is one of the main concepts of this course. So it's so important that, in fact, we will basically split the course in two parts. One is many body physics at equilibrium, and the other one is away from equilibrium. And so being at equilibrium, what really means is that some quantities, or in principle all the quantities that you can measure, are steady in time. They don't change in time. Okay? And this notion, however, is already a complicated notion, but let's bite for a second. So a real equilibrium state is stable. Okay. Then there are metastable states. That means that they are almost at equilibrium, but if one waits a very, very long time, they actually relax to the true equilibrium. And the typical example is the one in which you have some potential of this fall. And this barrier is very high. Okay? So this is some sort of local equilibrium state. Right? But if there are fluctuations, the real equilibrium state is, oh, maybe I will find my ball here, or I will find it here. Because thermal fluctuations can make me go over the hill. The point is that if this hill is high enough, it will take a lot of time. So now imagine that this hill has a height that scales with n. So in the thermodynamic limit, these two equilibria, these two minima, are completely disconnected. And this becomes a real equilibrium state. However, this is the thermodynamic limit is an idealization. So here there is an order of limit things. So should I first wait for a very long time and then do the thermodynamic limit, or the other way around? So because the thermodynamic limit is an idealization, n is in fact always finite. And what we mean by metastable states is that this time is actually very, very long. It's terribly long. It's exponentially long in n. So for all practical concerns, it's infinite, but it is not infinite. Okay? So this distinguishes metastable states from real equilibrium states. So, by the way, this phenomenon is one of the most important phenomena in many-body theory, and it's responsible for the appearance of order for what we call symmetry breaking. And for many applications, like the fact that we can build objects like hard drives So a hard drive is a device where you store information, and without doing anything, you find it back the next day, right? So this means that the system is away from equilibrium. So in storing information means that you have a system away from equilibrium, right? Information is like these writings on the blackboard. This is not the equilibrium state. The one that is at equilibrium is when I start smearing the chalk on the blackboard. In fact, you know, if you look at this blackboard in 500 years, you will not see this, of course, because somebody will erase it. But even if you leave it alone in a tomb, you will see something that is all smeared. You know, so the chalk cannot disappear, but the information does. However, the information encoded in hard drives is there pretty much forever. So we can do that because there are metastable states. So we can build devices in which we have many cells like this, in which we can encode information in 0 or 1, and then they stay there forever until we do something, okay? Until we write information again. So now you can immediately ask the question, okay, but if this is a quantum system, in the end everything is a quantum system, right? Because matter is governed by quantum mechanics. I can think of making a superposition of these two states. Right? Everything is a quantum state, so in principle, in quantum mechanics, there is no rule that tells me that there are superpositions that I cannot make. Actually, there are some rules. What are these rules? What superpositions I cannot make?
Symmetry, like fermionic boson,
good. Good. Or even charge rules. You cannot make a superposition of an electron and a proton. You have some super selection rules. But apart from the non super selection rules, there is no reason why I should not be able to do the superposition of these two. And then I ask myself, is this superposition metastable? Okay. And the answer is no. Okay, so we will see why it's not. But then we have this question. Are quantum metastable state possible? Which also becomes a... So there is another way of phrasing this question that is, do we have a Schrödinger cat? Right? Because this is what a Schrödinger cat is a superposition between two macroscopic states. Because remember, here we are talking about a system that has a large number of particles. So if you have studied the coherence, you know why it's extremely hard to have a Schrödinger cat. But the argument of the coherence doesn't rule out that they can exist. It just says why usually it's like that. So is it a law of nature that there are no macroscopic quantum metastable states or not? And so this law of nature is not a fundamental law of nature. It's not in the basic equations of quantum mechanics. But it's still a question, I believe, within the theory. So one has to find the answer to this question within the theory. So within the statistical mechanics applied to a system that obeys the laws of quantum mechanics. So, as I said, we will be studying two situations. One is equilibrium. And in quantum mechanics, the equilibrium state, the interesting equilibrium state, I should say, is described by the Gibbs state. That is described by this expression. Where beta is the inverse temperature. And this is the Hamiltonian of the system. And Z is the partition function. It's just the sum over all my energies of this object. Okay. So how many of you are familiar with the formalism of density matrices?
We've studied them.
Okay, so you know that this is a density matrix, right?
I think there's no trace in the expression for row.
Sorry?
For row, for the deep state, there's no trace, I guess.
Sorry, yeah, of course. Or this is one. Sure, thanks. We will be very interested in the situation in which the temperature is zero, or beta is infinity. And so for beta that goes to infinity, the density matrix, what state is it? It's the ground state of the system. And the reason why we are interested especially in the ground state is because we really want to understand the quantumness of these systems. And therefore, we would like, in principle, all the fluctuations that we have in the system to be of quantum nature. If you are at finite temperature, the two types of fluctuations compete. If you're at low enough temperature, and for room temperature, the thermal fluctuations dominate. So we wouldn't see very easily quantum effects. So we are mainly interested to the ground state. So I have a question for you. When we do this, do we have, so it's the ground state of the system. So this sentence is does completely specify the state of the system, or there is some ambiguity?
Yeah.
Very good. So if there is degeneracy in the ground state, like in this example, right? So we have two minima, two ways of minimizing the energy, then what do we mean by the ground state of the system? So we can mean this one, some superposition of the two, or some mixture of the two, right? So we could have any superposition of this type, but we could also have something of this type. And we are very interested in understanding what are the differences between these situations and physically to what they correspond. So usually when people imagine this limit physically, like you start with the system at finite temperature, then you cool it down, then the ground state of the system is what is called the thermal ground state of the system. And people imagine that it has this form. Okay? However, this is only true if you imagine that you do this procedure many, many times. For a single shot experiment, if there is a spontaneous symmetry breaking, you would end up in one of these two states. Okay? And of course, with these probabilities. So you can again think of writing it in this way, but you have to keep in mind that actually it's only one of the two. So we will try to understand the structure of quantum correlations in the ground state of systems that are that have a thermodynamic limit of particles. And then we are interested in physics away from equilibrium. And in particular, we have two questions. The first one is, how is equilibrium reached? So the reason why we're interested in equilibrium is because we see that equilibrium is always reached. So that's why it's important. It's not something weird. But we know that we can prepare a system away from equilibrium. So how is equilibrium reached in quantum mechanics? So this question is very difficult. In fact, in some sense, it can't. A quantum system, in some sense, cannot equilibrate. Okay? Why? So, do you know why? Because time evolution is unitary. So the sense in which it cannot reach equilibrium is if we have a closed quantum system. And the time evolution in a closed quantum system is given by the evolution operator ut, that is this object. Okay? And this is unitary. And why, so why, if your evolution is unitary, you cannot equilibrate?
If you start in some combination of eigenstates, you get the same distribution over your eigenstates multiplied by different phases at some point in time, they never actually equilibrate.
Okay, but why this would imply, so by equilibration, one means that at some point there is a steady state. So what you say is absolutely true, but why does it imply that you do not reach a steady state? In fact, in some sense, it's not true. I'll show you. So there are examples, but they are trivial. So if you start from an eigenstate, of H, then it's steady. Means that UT psi is still psi. Doesn't evolve in time. So our question is, so anyway, it is true that we only have trivial examples like these ones, like states that are already at equilibrium from the beginning. And this is because the evolution is unitary, so let's show it. Let's see that. So we are, our question is, do we have states such that if I take the limit of t going to infinity of ut of some initial state, rho zero. So when I write it like this, I can use calligraphic U. What I mean is the so-called adjoint action. I mean this. This is obviously the same thing than this applied to the state. Only for the density matrix. Okay. So do we have this limit? Let me call this final state rho infinity. Does this limit exist? So if this limit exists, this would be a steady state, right? Because ut applied to rho infinity would be still rho infinity. It would be a fixed point, right? The limit of any function is a fixed point. So this is our question. Okay, so let's pretend it exists, okay? And then let me, oh, so by the way, this one I could call it rho of t. So now let me take the difference between these two guys, rho of t and rho infinity. And now I will use a trick that we will use many times in this course, is that in order to evaluate how different states or operators are, we make the difference and then we take the norm. So this is a crude way of quantifying differences, but if you show that that the norm is small, then it means that the states are almost the same, right? So because of this property, I can put ut here, right? And this one is this guy. And this operator is linear, so I can write it in this way. Rho of 0 minus rho infinity. So far, so good. Now we use unitarity. So do you know what is the property of the norm with respect to unitary operators? Very good. So u for any f is the norm of f. Okay. So this is just this difference. So this is an identity. Now let's take the limit for t going to infinity of this object. Okay? So let me put the lim t going to infinity, which means I have the same lim here and the same lim here. So of course, this does nothing here, right? Because this does not depend on time. So it's just itself. So I don't need it. But because of our hypothesis, this is zero, which means that this is zero, which means that from the beginning, rho zero is equal to rho infinity. So the only way this limit exists is if from the first instant, from the beginning, we are already in an equilibrium state. So only in these trivial cases, like psi being an eigenstate of H, or psi being already in equilibrium state, in this case rho, I should say, like the Gibbs state. So also rho beta, the Gibbs state, is an equilibrium state. So by the way, another characterization of the equilibrium state, because rho is an equilibrium state if rho of t is constant, then the equilibrium states are characterized by this. So every function of the Hamiltonian is an equilibrium state. So that's why the Gibbs state is an equilibrium state. It has to commute with the Hamiltonian, so cannot evolve in time. So unless I'm already at equilibrium, so I start from an eigenstate or from the Gibbs state, we do not have the situation in which I have some wave function away from equilibrium, and they wait a very long time, at the end is at equilibrium. Nevertheless, this is what we see all the time, that quantum systems, also non-quantum systems, but systems do equilibrate. So we have this problem. How is equilibrium reached? Okay. So this is one of the questions that we will try to answer. And the second question is this mechanism, if we find it, universal? Or there are different ways of equilibrating or not equilibrating? So you can recognize that this question is related to the question of, do quantum metastable states exist? Because that is an example of having states that do not want to equilibrate. Okay? All right. So the first thing I want to say about... So this is somehow an outline of the things that we will deal with. So let's start. So the first concern we must have is that when we talk about the thermodynamic limit, this thing cannot be taken lightly. You cannot always take a quantum system with many particles and send n to infinity. This limit, so mathematically, this means that the limit does not always exist. Although you should ask me, the limit of what? Because mathematically, I'm doing the limit of what function. And also physically, it means that we cannot have systems in some cases with any number of particles that we want. So do you understand what is the reason, the concrete reason behind this? Just try.
Probably because Gibbs state, okay, it does not like Gibbs state, maybe.
I mean, as a consequence, that you would not be able to also define the Gibbs state. But no, it's a more concrete reason.
If you go to the thermodynamic limit, the system doesn't get infinitely large.
Okay, so this is more like that. So doing the thermodynamic limit, you have to bear in mind that, so what we usually do see is that the energy of a system is an extensive quantity. So if it is an extensive quantity, it must depend on n, right? And also the volume of a system is an extensive quantity. It depends on n. And are we ensured that these quantities are still extensive in the thermodynamic limit? Or in other words, if I compute the energy density, that is just this guy, I ask, does this limit exist? So if this quantity blows up, means that we would have an infinite energy density, which is not physical. So systems with an infinite energy density are not physical. Can you tell me an example of such systems? They're not weird.
The quantum vacuum.
the quantum.
Sorry, an easy one, the interacting electron gas.
The weakly interacting electron gas.
Yeah.
Okay. So in general, a system of charges. Okay. So if you have a system of charges, they interact pairwise with the Coulomb potential. So this is the interaction between two of them. Okay, so exercise, compute the energy density in the thermodynamic limit for a system of n particles that interact pairwise in this way. And to make the calculation easy, you can imagine that they are, that the volume in which they are contained is a sphere. Right? So sending the volume to infinity means that you send the ball to infinity. So you will find that this quantity is blows up. So this you have already done this this exercise when you did electrostatics. It's just an application of Gauss' law. But not you didn't take the thermodynamic limit. So if you take the thermodynamic limit, you see that this blows up. So by the way, this also means that a system of cosmic bodies is not described by statistical mechanics, because you don't have the thermodynamic. It's the same potential, right? A system of gravitationally interacting bodies.
Well, but wouldn't those be subject to some kinds of corrections?
Sorry, can you speak louder?
But obviously those are subject to corrections, some or the other thing. Gravitational systems. I mean, it has to be a bit more robust, the result, for slightly more general class of potentials to actually rule that out. Because do we know that all PPM corrections don't have this problem?
So no, what I'm saying is that the gravitational system, even without corrections, is already not stable.
Right.
With corrections, doesn't they're corrections.
Doesn't help.
Yeah, corrections don't change the fact that this blows up. So you simply cannot have the thermodynamic limit.
Sorry, but I don't understand what was written on the left part of the board. Okay, this reasoning that equilibrium state doesn't exist, okay? It doesn't tell anything about the number of particles in the system.
Right? No, you can. That's correct. I'm just saying you cannot, the limit, n to infinity limit, it does not exist.
No, I mean, for example, if we are performing the reasoning, which is on the left side of the board, okay?
So here?
Yeah, this one, okay? If we're performing this reasoning, we don't have to consider n here, what is the number of particles, and we don't have to take the limit.
Yeah, so this is a very strong result. Because here, I didn't, so if this is always true, so it's also true in the thermodynamic limit. Okay, this is a very interesting comment. In this derivation here, I never use the number of particles. So as long as the evolution is unitary, there is no way that a wave function can equilibrate. So either evolution is not unitary, or we must think out of the box. One could say that thinking that evolution is not unitary is thinking out of the box because you need a new theory. But our goal is to try to solve this problem within the theory. So we will maintain the fact that evolution is unitary. However, this is a theorem, right? It's a very simple theorem. The wave function will not equilibrate. Full stop. So, this is something that has bothered and still bothers people for a very long time. You know that Boltzmann committed suicide because of things like this, mm-hmm. Although in the classical regime. So you do this exercise. So if for a system of charges is not stable, how come matter is stable?
Well,
matter is a system of charges, right? The Hamiltonian of any material is the sum of, you know, you have all these protons and electrons, so you have the kinetic.
Just it wasn't clear for me. I mean, how this reasoning, okay, about that the state doesn't equilibrate, how is it at all related to the limit of n goes to infinity? So
It's completely, that's very correct. So this theorem, this very simple theorem, does not depend at all on n.
After you said about this theorem, you started asking the question, does the limit n goes to infinity exist, okay? So I just don't understand what is the relation between this question.
No, there is, I see, okay. So I finished the overview of the course. We are interested in understanding what is equilibrium, what types of orders are possible in quantum mechanics, and then we want to understand how equilibrium is reached. And I just show that this question is interesting because at first, prima facie, it seems you can't, okay? So that's the end of the overview. That's now first chapter. Let's start doing things. So the first thing I said is that we are interested in the thermodynamic limit. So now I'm saying things that are unrelated to this. And I'm just saying that already this notion, the thermodynamic limit, you need to be careful. The thermodynamic limit is not something trivial. It doesn't always exist. Okay? So a system of charges showed that doesn't have the thermodynamic limit. However, and also a system of cosmic bodies because it's the same potential. However, matter is stable. Matter is a system of charges. So we definitely can do the thermodynamic limit of ordinary matter, otherwise I wouldn't be here. But so why? Where's the catch? Why? It seems I contradict myself. I just say that the system of charges doesn't have a thermodynamic limit. Does anyone else? So in this system of charges, you see I'm saying they all have this potential. Okay? So they are always repelling each other. However, in a real system of charges, there are positive charges and negative charges. So there are also there can be, when you sum over all the possible interactions, there could be cancellations. So as you probably have studied in electrostatics, if you have two different charges, then you have screening. So the presence of charges of the other kind from a distance makes your potential look very different. And the form of screening is something like this. So if now you do the same exercise with this potential, you will see that the thermodynamic limit exists. And this is not a sufficient condition, but at least ensures us that the thermodynamic limit exists, and therefore there is some way in which matter can be stable, although we still have other problems. As I said, this doesn't rule out the fact the system can collapse. We do need quantum mechanics to avoid collapse, but at least we can do the thermodynamic limit. Okay, so in all the systems that we will see, the thermodynamic limit is well defined. Okay? So, but I will often keep in mind or show you expressions that depend explicitly from n. because the thermodynamic limit is mathematically very convenient, but its meaning is that it is a sort of bookkeeping for the asymptotic properties of a system with many particles. So what really matters is how things scale with the n, because in the end, the system is always finite. So we are interested in the scaling with n, especially. So I will not always take it, the thermodynamic limit. But if that doesn't exist, this is telling us that we cannot make n arbitrarily large. Okay, so we cannot even do scaling. So that's why it's important to determine whether the thermodynamic limit exists. So, okay. So granted that we have the thermodynamic limit, let's try to understand what is a quantum phase. And this question will accompany us along the whole course. So I will give a first answer here, but then we will ask this question again. We will see that as our understanding of quantum phases improves, then we will need to ask this question again. So we usually describe our system in this way. We have a Hamiltonian, and this Hamiltonian depends on a set of parameters. Okay? So let me write it like this. Or this vector, I can call it lambda. I can write it like this. So for every choice of these numbers, I have a different Hamiltonian. It's a family of Hamiltonians. And we like it to be smooth in these parameters. So there is nothing weird in the way the Hamiltonian depends on these parameters. You can take any derivative of any order, and everything will be very well behaved. Okay? Then you can diagonalize the Hamiltonian always, because it's a Hermitian operator, so you can diagonalize it, and you can find the ground state energy, which also depends on lambda, and the ground state wave function, that also depends on lambda. So theorem, this quantity is always continuous. Okay. There is no way that from a smooth Hamiltonian, I can have a ground state energy, or actually any eigenenergy, that is not a continuous function of the parameters. Okay. You cannot have jumps. However, what about this? This does not need to be continuous for every k. In fact, already for k equal 1, it could be not continuous. So when we have some non-analyticity in this function, means that some higher derivative is discontinuous, then we have what we call a quantum phase transition. So the first case is when this function is discontinuous. In this case, we have what is called the first order quantum phase transition. So there is a very simple example. Imagine that I have a Hamiltonian that has this form. So I start writing the spectral resolution of the Hamiltonian. So it means write the sum over all the projectors over all the eigenstates. So I have lambda, so h of lambda depends. We only have one parameter lambda, then we have the ground state. Then we have, let's say, the first excited state. And then we have all the other eigenstates, okay? That will depend in some way from lambda. The way the it's even the one depend on lambda is in this very simple way. So if you plot these energies, you see something like this. The rest of the spectrum does whatever it wants. So you see that E0 actually has this behavior. So the first derivative is discontinuous. So as you can immediately see, I don't need the rest of the spectrum to have this behavior. So even a two-level system can have a level crossing and therefore display some non-analyticity in the ground state energy. So this is not very interesting. There is nothing here that has to do with some many-body or statistical mechanics behavior. So we usually, there are cases in which.
But is it a function of lambda? Is the lambda on the horizontal axis?
Sorry?
Is lambda on the horizontal axis? Yeah.
Yeah. So we usually don't care about that because they're not very interesting. Then we have, sometimes they're called second order phase transitions, but there was an old classification that you classify them according to the order of the derivative that is discontinuous, but it's a bit misleading. What, now people prefer to talk about continuous phase transitions, quantum phase transitions, in which some derivative of order higher than the first one is discontinuous. And the typical picture is the following. So let me again show you the first two eigenstates. And you will have something like this for the ground state energy and something like this for the first excited state. So it's almost like a level crossing, but it's avoided. Okay? It's avoided the level crossing. So here you have a gap. So you have a gap everywhere, but here is where the gap is the smallest one. And we have a continuous quantum phase transition when in the thermodynamic limit, and only then, this object goes to zero. Then only in the thermodynamic limit, the second derivative or some other higher derivative of the energy is discontinuous. This point, so this happens for some value of lambda, not for every value of lambda. And this value of lambda is called quantum critical point. If we are nearby the quantum critical point, so in this region, for lambda almost critical, this behavior is proportional to some energy scale times this difference to some exponent that I would call zeta nu. So it's the product actually of two exponents and that I call critical exponents. So this allows us to introduce a concept that is very important in quantum statistical mechanics, that is the concept of universality. So when we want to talk about quantum phases, what we mean is that these ground states, as we change lambda, we want to say they're obviously very different ground states. But we want to say they belong to the same phase. It's like when you take, so if we want to describe many body systems, if, like when you take two samples of a material, they are not the same, okay? But they are the same material. So this means that there is some macroscopic qualitative feature that they have in common. And this, for a quantum material, this is what, in the end, we want to understand as a quantum phase. So we would like that this object changes with lambda, but doesn't change something that is important. So two states are in the same quantum phase. We will define this notion called universality class. So when two states belong to the same universality class, we will say they are in the same quantum phase. There is another notion of universality that regards this. So at some point, though, something critical happens, right? As we change the parameters, some derivatives blow up. So we cannot expect that we keep changing lambda and our material is always the same. It could change. For instance, if it's a magnetic material, so classically you already know, if instead of having the ground state, you have another parameter that is temperature, and you raise the temperature, at some point your material will not be, will demagnetize. So similarly, we will see that even at zero temperature, you can have transitions to a new kind of order that are these quantum phase transitions. And the critical point is the boundary between two phases. Also, the critical point can display universality. What it means is that if you, there are different systems that display the same critical behavior, meaning the same functional form for this, with the same exponents. And so we can also say that the quantum phase transitions can belong to some universality class. Another thing that will be very important is the behavior of connected correlation functions. So correlation functions that I will indicate like this. For instance, if I have two operators at two sites, I and j, for instance, spin operators sigma z. So the definition of this object is just that I am in the ground state, and I take this. The correlation between these two operators at two different sites, I and j, minus sigma zi psi 0 times sigma zj, always in psi 0. So this is the connected correlation function. If I don't have this term, but just this, I just call it correlation function. So we will see that if you have a gapped system, so a system in which there is above the ground state energy, there is a gap, that connected correlation functions decay exponentially. So this means that there is, so this introduces the notion of correlation length, that is this length over which the correlations decay. We will see that correlation lengths blow up at a quantum critical point, and it blows up in this way, so as I approach the critical point, they blow up like this. Also here, I should have a minus. Otherwise, it doesn't blow up. And also this can display, I mean, if this has a universal behavior, this has a universal behavior. And so you see that the gap and the correlation length are related in this way. And Z is called a dynamical critical exponent. So we will try to understand why these things are also universal. So this is the first example of the structure of correlations. We will show that this is true, that when if you have a gap, then correlation functions have to decay exponentially. And this is only a sufficient condition. So we will be, it will be very interesting to see if it's also true the other case. Do they have always to, this behavior for the correlation length is some typical behavior for, or it has to blow up to when the gap goes to zero. So we'll see that actually depends. So the last thing is that, so we are now able to give our first definition of what is a quantum phase. If I draw a diagram in which I put all the parameters of my Hamiltonian, I can draw lines in which we have, in which the gap shrinks to zero in the thermodynamic limit. We could have situations like this. So here, everywhere on these lines, the gap is shrinking. And everywhere else, we have a gap. So these are domains of analyticity of the ground state energy. And I call them P1, P2, P3, and so on and so forth. So the first answer to our question, what are quantum phases, is this. They are this domain of analyticity. And as you change domain, something, you have a quantum phase transition, something critical. OK, that's all for today.